Hey, I'm from Harlem in New York City. It's me, I'm Alex Bennett, and this is The Ramble.
There is a left coast, and if there is a left coast, living on that left coast, in the upper part of that left coast is what's left of Bubbles, Larry Bubbles Brown. Hello. Yes. Hello, Larry.
How you doing, Alex?
What's new?
Let's see. I haven't talked to you for a while. What's new with you? I think, is New York getting a commie mayor? What's going on?
Oh, yeah, our commie mayor. It's a weird thing here. They had a primary, okay? And Mario Cuomo ran, and he ran.
Since he had the big name.
What?
I thought he would win since he had a big name.
Well, I voted for Cuomo, and now I feel bad about it because I've listened to this other guy, and he's okay. You know, they're trying to say nasty things about him, like he's anti-Semitic. Well, to begin with, he is Semitic. But that he's anti-Semitic, and he's not, you know. When it comes to Palestine issues and so on, yeah, he's rooting for the home team. He's Muslim, you know. But I think he's okay, and I don't think he's going to make it difficult for Jews in New York, like people are trying to say. And I think he's okay, you know. So he went up against Cuomo, and I voted for Cuomo. Wow. And now Cuomo has decided he is staying in the race because he's a Liberal Party candidate or something like that. And so he's going to stay in the race, and he's up against the current Mayor Adams, who's a terrible mayor, by the way. And the two of them are going to kind of split the vote because they're both Democrats. So there are three Democrats running for mayor. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And what the two people are doing is they're going to water it all down. So it's possible that Cuomo could win this one, you know, or even Adams. I doubt that. Or even the Republican, who is Curtis Sliwa. You know, it's amazing. It's really quite amazing, to be honest with you.
Well, it would be hard to imagine New York with a Republican mayor, although it has happened.
Well, it's happened quite often. I mean, Bloomberg was a Republican originally. Then he became a liberal or whatever. And then he was kind of an independent candidate. So he was the last Republican mayor that we had. And there were a few others, you know.
Giuliani.
Giuliani. No, he wasn't mayor. Was he mayor? No.
Yeah.
Yes. No. God, my mind is gone. Was he?
He was definitely mayor, yes.
He was definitely mayor. Oh, yes, he was mayor, of course. Let me. I got a sneeze here.
It's a sneeze button.
Why sneeze, huh? Anyway, well, what?
Allergies.
Oh, yeah. Ugh. Anyway, so I am hope that this Mondami wins because he calls himself a democratic socialist, okay? And Trump calls him a communist. So that's what we're dealing with here, you know, and it's a weird race, but I just hope that Mondami wins. However, we're fighting in this household. Marjorie says I might vote for Cuomo, and I'm going, what? Oh, come on, you know, I'm going to have to divorce her.
Good thing you got a big house.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, that's what's happening with our mayor's race. It's crappy, and I don't like Cuomo even more because he shouldn't have run. He should have just endorsed this guy and allowed a real win because he lost in the primary. He didn't lose by just a little. He lost by a lot.
Yeah.
So that means we don't want you.
Well, we've got some corporate drone out here as the mayor for San Francisco now.
A corporate drone? Who is the mayor of San Francisco?
Some guy named Lurie. I think that name's been around here forever. But
wait a minute, you can't remember the name of your guy who's the mayor?
Donald Lurie, I think.
Donald Lurie. Oh, okay. Wasn't there a woman who was mayor one time?
That was London Breed.
Yeah. What happened to her?
She got beat by Lurie.
Oh boy.
I called her London Broil.
Well, now, is he a Republican?
No, but I think...
You can, out there in California, you can have two of the same party running against each other.
I think, you would probably know, but since I can't ever recall a Republican mayor in San Francisco.
I'm trying to think.
Maybe when you were a kid.
Yeah, I haven't been there for a long time, so I don't know who was there after I left. Okay. But while we were there, who was mayor when we were on the air? Who was the...
Let's see, I think...
Willie Brown.
Willie Brown, and then Art Agnos.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the old days was Alioto.
Yeah, of course.
I think he was a good mayor.
He was okay. Yeah, yeah. Angela Alioto was a good friend of mine.
Right, right.
I got to know her back in the days when we were doing our show. And I liked her a lot. She was on the city council. And I liked her a lot. We had a lot of fun. Although, one time I went down to... they have a thing, a Fisherman's Wharf, Alioto's thing on Fisherman's Wharf. What it's called? What's it called? Fisherman's Grotto Number 9? Something like that?
I think so, yeah.
Is that Alioto's?
I think it's theirs, yeah.
Anyway, I went to Alioto's to get crab, and it was a terrible experience.
Well,
and I mentioned this to Angela, and she started defending. Oh man, that's the company. That's a family business, for crying out loud, you know.
But it is kind of touristy.
Yeah.
So it's going to be crap.
Well, you see, I remember the days when I was a kid. Here's what my parents did. My mother worked in San Francisco. My father had a real estate office in San Francisco. So he would pick her up every day after work. And then they would go down at least once a week to Fisherman's Wharf, get a couple of crack crabs, all right, and some French sourdough French bread. And then they would come home and we would eat that. And that's my comfort food, okay? What a wonderful dinner that was, you know? And I learned how to crack crab and, you know, how to dissect the crab. You get the breast, and then you get all the meat out of the breast, and that's the best part. And then you make a little a crab cocktail, as it were, and you pour some sauce on it. Oh, it was a wonderful thing. Did you ever go down to Fisherman's Wharf and buy a crab?
No. I'd feel too guilty.
Too guilty?
Yeah, see those little things being hauled in and, ugh.
Well, I mean, come on. You know, I don't know. I never felt sorry for a crab. I don't know why.
Well, if you went to a slaughterhouse, you'd probably feel sorry for the cow.
What do you mean? Well, yes. But, you know, somebody said you really shouldn't name something you're going to have to eat someday.
Exactly.
That's from some movie or something where some kid was living on a ranch and he said, what can I name my cow? And they said, you never name something you're going to eat someday. You know, you have to disassociate survival and a good meal. From, you know, the fact that we're slaughtering cows. If we don't slaughter them, there are going to be way too many cows, and they're not going to be able to survive anyway. We're going to have to, like, shoot them.
Yep. That's true. But I think Paul McCartney became a vegetarian because he, after the Beatles, he lived on a big farm and had a bunch of animals, and they actually ate some of them. And then he realized how horrible that was.
Well, I mean, if you're in that situation, it might be terrible.
Yeah.
Okay? Horrible. But I don't know. My feeling is there are certain animals that are meant for slaughter. And, you know, I don't eat meat that much. I don't have steaks that often. You know, I can't, in fact, I'm trying to tell you the last time I had some meat. And it's not because I'm a vegetarian. It's just because meat today is not as good as it used to be. I mean, you used to be able to go in and get a nice thick steak, you know, and it was juicy and everything like that. And then you taste it, and it was just terrific. But today you do it, and it's mediocre. It's terrible. I can't even buy a good steak anymore to make at home.
Well, they pump it full of so much crap now, so you don't know,
yeah.
You know what's in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, I was never a vegetarian because I hate animals. So, you know, so.
Do you have any vegetarian friends?
Do I? I'm sure I do. I never ask them, though. And I never invite them to dinner.
Well, they usually tell you, so.
Well, you know, I mean, I think being vegetarian is somebody who doesn't really like food, doesn't like gourmet food. I mean, you go into a gourmet restaurant, and they're using beef like crazy, and they're doing wonderful things with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can't tell you the last time I ate some beef. And it's not because I'm a vegetarian. It's just because it's not that good anymore. Usually chicken, fish, lobster occasionally. We do eat lobster rolls. And Marjorie has this place where she gets a lobster pie. And it's really sensational, you know. But I don't go for beef much anymore, and it's just because it just doesn't taste as good as it used to.
I don't think I ever recall you eating fast food.
Everybody says bad things about fast food, and I don't know that I agree necessarily. I think there are. One time I asked Julia Child. Do you ever eat fast food? And she says, well, I think the best, and she was on our show when she said it, I think the best French fries in America are made by McDonald's. But before they stopped using, fats to do
beef tallow.
She said the fat they were doing it in was just sensational.
And then they were great.
And then they stopped doing that, and she says they're not that good anymore.
Uh-huh.
I asked Paul Prudhomme once, is there any fast food restaurant that you would eat in? He said, I would go to Popeyes any day of the week to get their red beans and rice.
Really?
He
wow.
said, it's the best red beans and rice you'll find anywhere in America.
Wow.
In fact, I was at a restaurant one night, and it was a Cajun restaurant, right? And they had red beans and rice on the menu. So I said, okay, I'll order the red beans and rice. I ordered it, and it was terrible, just terrible. And I called the owner over, and I said, you know, these red beans and rice are terrible. I said, you want my suggestion? They said, there's a Popeyes down the street. Go down there and buy a ton of their red beans and rice and serve it here. And everybody will say, boy, that's the best red beans and rice I've ever had. Because Popeyes, the menu at Popeyes was created, Paul Prudhomme told me this, was created by New Orleans chefs. And chefs that had worked under him.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I always thought... I've never been to one, but it always looked like such a ghetto place.
Actually, it has always had, I think, pretty good Louisiana-style chicken and food. And it's not terrible. It's pretty good. In fact, I've talked to people who just swear by Popeye's chicken. Just say it's terrific. You know, so for fast food, we go to Popeye's all the time. You know, it's right down the street, and so we'll go down and get ourselves some chicken and bring it home. And the trouble is, because it's a franchise, and because they're all franchises, they don't control what the franchisees do. And sometimes I'll walk away and the chicken is just the best, okay? And other times it'll be terrible. And it all depends on who was cooking that day, you know. So anyway.
Well, that's wild that you live near a Popeye's.
Yep. Yep, I sure do. Well, come on, it's a black neighborhood. You know. I'll tell you, I haven't had it in years, but what was, to me, great fried chicken was Kentucky Fried Chicken. You know? So when you talk about these fast food places, yeah, I went to them, you know, because some of them were really good. Do you go to any fast food places?
I try to avoid them. In-N-Out actually has a good burger.
In-N-Out has a good burger, yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't mind the fact that if you look under the cup, if you get the soda, there's a tract from the Bible.
Yes, it's, I think, a John 3:16 or something.
Something like that, yeah, yeah. But I had In-N-Out, and I had it once. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was terrific, but I thought it was okay. And in our neighborhood, in the marina, we used to have a Jack in the Box. Is it still there?
It's long gone. It's now an apartment building.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Remember, yeah, it actually had a drive-through there.
It had a drive-through, yeah. And I used to pass it all the time, and it was owned by Purina at the time. But they didn't make a big deal out of it being Purina. They just had the Purina logo on the bottom of the Jack in the Box logo,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And I used to call it Purina People Chow.
People Chow. And, of course, you remember the great Doggy Diner.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
those
yeah.
Those were good, weren't they, as I recall?
Well, that wasn't a chain, though. That was, like, local, wasn't it?
It was a local chain. Yeah.
Yeah,
they had, like, about probably 15 restaurants in the Bay Area.
Doggy Diner. Yeah.
That was it.
They served hot dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had, there was one at, I think, Fillmore and Lombard.
Fillmore and Lombard? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It was near your old place.
Yeah, well, I remember there was one on Lombard.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things that went the way of the dodo, though. There was an ice cream thing down on Lombard called Herbert Sherbert Shoppy.
I never heard of that one.
Yeah. They served sherbet. It was really good. My parents used to like to pick up sherbet there and bring it home, you know. Because I ate everything my parents bought as they were coming home. Because my mother didn't have time to cook, you know, because she was working. So we ate before
my time. I heard you probably know there was a place my father used to tell me about this called Foster's Cafeteria.
Yes, I remember it vaguely. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what I remember is Foster's Freeze. Do you still have Foster's Freeze out there?
I don't see.
That was
them,
that no. Soft serve ice cream.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Marjorie hates the soft serve ice cream. I've always liked the soft serve ice cream. You know, no soft. We used to have Foster's Freeze. What else?
There was the Hippo on Van Ness.
The Hippo. I vaguely remember it. And here's what I remember about it. There was an artist in San Francisco who, when I was a kid, I was a big fan of, and he did a couple of kids' books and things like that. And his name was Wolo.
Wolo So.
You know Wolo?
I remember that from the murals in the restaurant, yeah.
Yeah, well, the Hippo, he had murals in the Hippo, and he did the Hippo, the thing of the Hippo. So I loved Wolo's work. He did animals a lot.
Yeah, and they had like 50 different kinds of burgers at that place.
Yeah, and I have, what do I have? I have a, I have, what was it? It was, I'm trying to think now what it was. Damn it. I used to have, I can't remember what I was going to say. That's strange. No, it's not strange. My mind's going.
You had pictures of Wolo, so.
No, we had Wolo, and then I was going to talk about some other artist. Have you ever heard of Benjamin Bufano?
That name sounds familiar.
If you go to there's a church in North Beach in which there's a statue of St. Francis of Assisi. Do you know that statue?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Bufano did that.
Okay.
That's Bufano's work. I have here in my home a little thing I can put on a desk, a large, not a little, kind of large, of Bufano's cat. He was famous for doing cats as sculptures. And this is a Bufano cat. I don't know where my parents got it. They love Bufano. I think it was, but he didn't do it personally. This was one of the ones that was mass produced. But it's a wonderful sculpture. Just a wonderful sculpture. So we're talking about all the great artists of San Francisco, ladies and gentlemen.
And all the great restaurants that are gone.
One of the great artists of San Francisco comedy, Larry Bubbles Brown.
Do you remember Zim's?
Zim's, that was a hamburger joint. Good hamburger joint. Open 24/7, I think.
They were, yeah.
And they were on where? I remember one on...
There was one on Van Ness. No, yeah, Van Ness and 19th Lombard. I mean...
19th Avenue?
19th, yeah, for sure. 19th and way out there, like by Taravelle.
Yeah. And Zim's had great hamburgers. In the middle of the night, we would go... what? Marjorie is sending me stuff. Oh, geez. You hear that ding that went off? Anyway. Let me see here. So, Zim's, yeah, they had great hamburgers. They're not there anymore, right? They don't exist.
They went out of business.
I think a lot of those places went out of business because the big organizations like Burger King and McDonald's kind of came in their wake and they couldn't compete with it.
Right.
Because they were just local. You know, these were local guys. I don't know there were Zim's anywhere else in the country.
Yeah, I think they were just local.
You know what was great about the old days is that you could get things on the East Coast you couldn't get on the West Coast, and you could get things on the West Coast you couldn't get on the East Coast. There were a lot of things that didn't travel past the Mississippi from the East Coast. For instance, I'll give you a good example. There's a mayonnaise here in New York called Hellman's. It's the number one mayonnaise to this day. It's been around forever, okay? But you want to buy mayonnaise, you buy Hellman's, right? Mm-hmm. And then you bring it home, and the mayonnaise lasts forever, so you use it to... there isn't anymore. But it's out on the West Coast, but you don't know if Hellman's out on the West Coast, do you?
No.
Because... west of the Mississippi, it's called Best Foods. And you know Best Foods, right?
Yeah.
So you see? So there was a whole culture that was East Coast that never made it to the West Coast. When I had a relative come from New York, they always brought me something I always wanted, and it was called Barton's Chocolates. Now, do you know Barton's Chocolates?
Did not hear of them, no.
No, but I think they still have them here in New York. They were actually considered to be kosher chocolates. And they were really good. You know, they were terrific. And you couldn't get them on the West Coast. So but now most everything has just gone national. You know, you can get it everywhere. So
all a bunch of crappy chain stuff.
Yeah, you know, I mean, kids growing up today don't know the kind of stuff we knew growing up that was kind of special and different, you know?
That's right. Kids
don't know Zim's in San Francisco. They don't know all these places we talked about, you know? The Hippo.
The Hippo. I love the Hippo.
Yeah. But, I mean, they all disappear, and the kids today deal with the newer stuff. So, whatever, you know? I'm sorry for them in a lot of ways. Because they don't have, to begin with, they don't have well-done food. It's all processed.
Processed, you know, and microwaved.
I mean, you go to McDonald's, and I think you're eating a processed hamburger. But in the old days, when you went to Zim's, you weren't getting a processed hamburger. There was some cow that got chopped up, and that was your hamburger.
Yeah.
You know? And today they go, oh, you can't have that. You can't have this. It's terrible. Hey, listen, we've run out of time, I noticed here.
It flew by.
Yeah, want to do it next week?
Of course.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Larry Bowles Brown. Boy, I'm hungry now.
Now, in its 11th year, this is Gabnet. Talk like you've never heard it before.
And that was Larry Bubbles Brown. He's here every Friday night, usually. Usually that's when we run him. I'm Alex Bennett, and this is our little program, and we're doing a, what is it? This is a Friday, okay? And we have a couple of people waiting on the line to talk to us, and we'll see what happens here. But all the rest of you are able to call as well. However, if you're trying to get on here and you're one of those phony guys, I can pretty well suss you out, and I don't. If I do put you on, nothing gets on the air because I go to my face, which is an ugly thing to do. And when we go to my face, they can't see you or what you're doing. And I also turn down the audio, too. So it's really a waste of your time. So you can try. Sometimes they try, and they keep putting in different names all the time until I'm finally, you know. I finally see about a dozen guys there, and I go, they're all phony. I'm not letting them on. So they haven't been too successful lately. So, and if we find out who you are, we're turning you over to the authorities, okay? All right. Anyway, I'm a little bit, I'm having a little bit of a problem here with, I see a little bit on the video, show here. I see that it's a little bad, but let's go to this. Is everybody here? No, people I accept. That's right. People I accept. Here they come, folks. Tom Yamaguchi is there, and Charlie Wallace, and Alan, and Josh. Let me see here. That should at least get us off to a good start. And I'm not, I don't have the same problem I had with my regular thing. I'm going to have to work on that over the weekend. It was my fringe on my my arm was, if you look at this, you can see the fringe on my arm. You see? It's green. And I need to adjust that. But I don't need to do it now because I've got all these people looking really good. And I say hello to Tom Yamaguchi. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, he's doing fine. And how are you doing, Alan?
I'm doing good, too.
You're doing good, too. All right. All right. There we go. And Josh, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Okay. And, of course, Charlie Wallace. Hi there, Charlie.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, anyway, I don't know why I'm sounding so low to me, but let me just do something here. I can bring it up a little bit here and talk to me there, Charlie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm doing all right.
All right, that's better. That's much better. Okay, all righty. And let me see here. Let me just get everything together, and we're ready to go. And so, hello, Tom Yamaguchi.
Hi.
What's been going with you lately? Anything interesting?
Well, I got back from a trip from L.A., actually Whittier.
Whittier. It was a Quaker thing, wasn't it, you said?
Yeah. And I was just wondering if you'd be interested in talking about people who died.
Well, there's some people who died that I don't know about.
I think there are people that if you heard the name, you know them.
Oh, okay. Well, let's give it a try. Well, first, let me say hello to Alan. Hello, Alan. Hello, hello. Josh. Hello, Charlie. Okay, give me some people who died.
Alan Bergman.
Alan Bergman. Alan Bergman was with the what was the name of that comedy group? Tell me the name of the group. Yeah.
Well, he and his wife Marilyn.
Oh, Alan Bergman. Oh, that Alan Bergman. I was thinking of another guy who was with the who was that comedy group that was out for a while?
I don't know.
But there was a Bergman with that. Alan Bergman, actually, I dated his niece.
Right. That's the reason.
Alan and Marilyn Bergman, yeah, they wrote a lot of big hits, you know. They wrote The Way We Were. That would be probably the one that people are most familiar with.
The musical or the movie?
It wasn't a musical. There wasn't.
They wrote the score
for a movie.
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
They wrote the song. Actually, the score was written by Marvin Hamlisch, who wrote the music. They were lyricists.
Right. Good. Now look what you started, Tom. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? Look what he started.
Oh, go ahead.
I went out and I dated his their niece, and she got sick once, and I went out to her place in Long Island, and she's sitting around there looking through a thing full of letters. She says, oh, these are letters my parents got, you know, or that they sent, rather. They sent. And this was a letter that, and her name was Bergman as well, this was a letter that was sent by her father to her mother, proposing to her, and the letter read, what are you doing the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, I guess they stole that from my parents, you know, because one of their big songs was, what are you doing for the rest of your life? So, anyway, I'm very familiar with Bergman. I'm sorry, I thought of another Bergman because I thought you were, you know, knowing you, I didn't think you were going to get that eclectic. You know,
no, I was just saying that when I read the obituary, I mean, that story that you told was the first thing that came into my mind,
mm-hmm.
and that you had.
They've got to be. They have to be in their 90s or something.
I think he was. Well, he was in his 80s.
80s, really?
Late 80s.
Oh, wow!
And his wife died just about 3 years ago.
Marilyn Bergman, yeah.
Marilyn Bergman, yeah. Let me see if I can.
You know, that always happens to people. They have a tendency to die. When their mate dies, they die after that. This is a little longer than usual, but, you know.
Excuse me. He was 99. Yes, he was very old. He was almost 100.
I didn't think that I was the same age as her uncle, okay? You know, or near the age of her uncle. So,
yeah.
He was 99, and so I guess she was shy of that, I would imagine.
Let's see.
I don't want Marjorie to die because usually this happens where people are married and they're married for a long time and then all of a sudden one of them dies and the other one, you know, usually within a year or so.
Yeah. But Marilyn, she was 93 when she died.
She was 93 when she died. What did you say?
22.
What did you say?
All I said is, you're still around. Didn't one of your wives die?
Yeah, Ronnie.
Okay.
But I wasn't married to her at the time. It was years after we were married.
Okay.
Actually, a couple of them have died. What, your first wife died too, right?
No, I don't think. I don't know what happened to my first wife. She could still be out there somewhere doing something. I have no idea, though. She was about my age. So she could conceivably still be alive or be dead. You know, I don't know. I never hear from her. I've never heard from her. Not since the day she left.
Even though you inherited a lot of money, you still haven't heard from her.
That's right. But no, I haven't. Anybody else die? You said?
Connie Francis? She died a couple days ago.
Of course she died.
Yeah, I was going to say that. She went viral on TikTok. She was viral on TikTok right before she passed, and she was able to see that.
Was she able to? Was she saying she was dying?
No, No. It wasn't because she was dying. It was just somebody had taken one of her songs.
Oh, no, they had done that, and it had become very popular again among the young kids. Okay. Yeah. And so she decided she was kind of going to make a comeback and come out and sing something new or something. And before she could get to it, she dropped dead. So, yeah. So,
she wasn't very young either, though, was she?
No, she was in her 80s. I think she was older than me.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. How old was she? Do you see there how old she was? You know?
She was 87, I think.
87? Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's.
Anybody else die that I should know about?
Well, Felix Baumgartner. You remember him? Felix Baumgartner.
Was he a member of the Supreme Court?
He could have been. No, he was a skydiver.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How'd he die?
He's the guy that jumped out of a capsule in the stratosphere and did the longest parachute.
Oh, that one, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, he took his last jump.
Oh, really?
But it wasn't on the stratosphere, was it?
No, it was. He was paraglliding in Italy, and he crashed into a hotel swimming pool.
Oh, oops. That was in the news today. I only caught part of it.
Yeah, so that he died.
Couldn't you somehow correct your fall or something if you were that close to the ground? You know,
I don't know.
Usually you think of, a lot of people die getting tangled up in electrical wires and things like that.
Yeah.
Helicopters have their biggest liability when they hit electrical wires.
Like Bill Graham.
Like Bill Graham. Yeah, I was about ready to say that. Yeah.
I don't know. Crashing into a river in a helicopter, like Jane Doornacher, wasn't that her name, that went into the near Reagan National?
You are so wrong on everything. I can't believe it.
There was some comedian.
It was the West River, you know, which is the Hudson River, she fell into. And she was doing it while she was doing a traffic report for the Howard Stern radio show.
Did I get the person right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I got two-thirds of it right.
Yeah.
I thought it was the river that ran near Reagan National. Sorry.
Yeah. No, we felt very bad about that because she was a nice lady. I liked her, you know.
You guys worked together?
Yeah, we did a music video together.
She was a comedian too, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. And she was also in...
here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, she also made movies. She was in, what do you call it, The Right Stuff.
Oh, really?
She plays the nurse in The Right Stuff. So.
Of course, John Denver died in a plane crash too.
Yeah. Planes have a problem. Helicopters, if there's nothing around the helicopters, they're not falling into something, you can survive a helicopter crash. Yeah. Because the rotors keep going because of the air, and you float down to the ground. But if there's an electrical wires in front of you or something that would impede your success at falling... And then you die. That's how you die in helicopters.
This is something I do know a little bit about, but if you lose power in a helicopter and you're high enough in the air, and the helicopter pilot is trained for this, it's called auto-rotation, and the blades continue to hold you up, and it's a hard landing. And most people survive it. You're right about that.
Yeah,
but it's a hard landing.
But most of the time you hear about people hitting buildings or hitting wires or something like that. So if there's anything in the way, if we just went down into a field and there was nothing on either side of you, you'd probably survive.
Probably.
So. Still, have you ever been in a helicopter?
Me?
Yeah. There's something scary about them. Mainly because the person operating the helicopter has to keep his hand on the stick at all times. It's not like you can go, I'll let the thing fly itself. What?
I took helicopter lessons. I thought I wanted to be a helicopter pilot.
But you got
to
keep your hand on the stick, don't you? Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I didn't get far enough into school to do a night flying.
Here's a little piece of trivia. I know who invented the helicopter.
Sikorsky.
You're right. Very good.
I'm on a roll.
No. You were wrong on so many things tonight already that just because you got that right, it's nice. I'm glad. It's nice to know that.
He was a Russian, right?
Sikorsky? I would think so.
I think so with a name like that.
Yeah. No, he was Russian. Absolutely. So anybody else? I guess that's it, huh?
I think that's the big ones. I mean, there's a bunch of minor ones, but not that. Those are probably the big ones for this week.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. What has he got here? What is Bree trying to show us? What? What is that? What is that, Bree?
Well, you're always interested to know what I'm eating, and this is what I'm having for my brunch.
Stacker, you're just eating. Oh, it comes with what? It's mixed with cheddar cheese and crackers. So it's just one cracker, right?
No. And there's a bunch.
No. What I'm saying. I see. You have to assemble it.
Yeah, it's like Lunchables.
Oh, okay.
I got for $4.50 Singaporean. But the first night I was here, I paid $8.95 at another store because it was in a fancier location.
And because they saw you coming.
Right. Yeah.
Here comes another American.
Yep, here comes another American. So what if he's living in Malaysia?
Well, the first place I bought it was the entertainment district. It's always more expensive there.
Mm-hmm.
So I should have been cautious. But I had a stomach bug yesterday. I was out the whole day. I'm back today.
So that's why you're eating that? Three countries in 3 days?
Yeah.
What countries?
Well, this is my regular pumping grounds, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand.
Okay. All right. So anyway, and what are you doing? You said you were doing some kind of stuff for work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I am sweating tonight. It is hot in here. My air conditioner is working, but geez.
It's the same here. They moved me. I was downstairs a room.
Mm-hmm.
It was freezing cold. And up here, it's just sort of, But I've got a better view.
Oh, look at Jeff. He's putting on a sweater. Why?
It must be cold.
Normally he's taking it off. You're muted, Jeff.
You're muted, Jeff. We couldn't hear what you said. Are you in an heavily air conditioned area?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And it's too freaking cold.
It doesn't look like your house.
It's not your house, is it?
Correct.
It's a hotel.
I am in a hotel.
Where's the hotel?
In the lower west part of New York City.
Oh, really? So you're here?
Yeah.
Oh, well, come on over now and see me.
I got my
show together.
I got my daughter, my son-in-law, and two kids who are now adult kids.
Adult kids who are your grandchildren.
Grandchildren, yeah. Wow.
How adult are they now? I mean, what ages?
Well, one of them is a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is a senior in college.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, coming along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing good.
Grandpa Jeffrey.
Yep.
Well, how about Grandpa Charlie? We got Grandpa Charlie here. Charlie's a grandpa. And I haven't checked in with you, Tom, but are you a grandfather?
I'm a grandfather, yeah. My two granddaughters going into is a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if I ever knew who my child was, my boy, although I don't know that it was mine, okay, but I'm assuming it was. That's the kind of guy I am, but I never was able to have any contact with the child. I could probably be a great grandfather by now.
Yeah.
You know, because I that kid was born when I was 19. So easily I could be a great grandfather.
Yeah.
But I missed out on that part of my life. We haven't had any kids. You haven't had any kids, have you, Josh?
No.
So And you haven't either, right, Alan?
That's correct.
Yeah. Do you miss that at all, Josh?
No.
That was an easy answer.
Yeah, about, I'm the opposite.
How about you?
I miss that part of my life.
You miss that part of your life? Why?
Because it would be nice to have kids. Somebody to take care of me in my senior years now.
Well, oh, don't worry. They won't do that.
Oh, okay. I'll take your word for it.
I once in a while I'll say to myself, you know, you know, I might be nice, might have been nice, but on the other hand, I keep saying if I had done it, I don't think I would have had the career I've had. So you know,
like DJs have babies.
Well, they have babies. But everyone I've known has had to do things because they had a responsibility. I never had a responsibility, and so I could take any chances I wanted to with my career. I, in one case, told one station to take the job and shove it. You know, I would have never done that. If I had kids waiting at home, I would have never done that.
Right.
You know? So that's you know, there are times when I feel, hey, it would be nice, you know, like we're going in to see the lawyer to make out a new will, and I'm thinking, gee, we have nobody to leave it to, and neither does Marjorie. So you know, it's the same. Last night we were talking about the whole Colbert situation, and Josh brought up the fact that he felt it was a money issue, that they, you know, that the show wasn't making enough money and so on. Didn't you say that, Josh?
It wasn't me.
Well, I think you said something to that effect, and I kind of said, I
didn't think it was a money issue. That I mean, maybe it's, I don't know if it's making money, but I don't know that it, I said I didn't think that they cut it because they can't afford to do late night television.
Oh, okay. All right.
They can't afford to, they're just choosing not to.
Yeah, well, it seems as though it's a number one show. I didn't know that. I never liked Colbert that much, but it's the number one show. And why they couldn't make money out of it, I don't know. But part of the reason is that he doesn't have the same ratings, even though he's number two, that Letterman had when he was on the air, and he was like number two. You know, late night has kind of shifted. People aren't paying attention to late night quite as much as they used to. And it turns out that every other network has cut back on what they're paying for a show to run. Seth Meyers, for instance, was forced to get rid of his band because they didn't want to have to pay for a band on that show. Fallon has been cut down to four nights a week. Jimmy Kimmel has always been four nights a week, so there are no cutbacks there. Plus, that show is done probably more inexpensively than any of these other shows.
How about Carson?
Carson was the biggest cost of the Carson show was Carson. You know, he made about... I think at one point towards the end, he was making $30 million a year or something.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
David Letterman was making, oh God, I wish I had my friend here. Letterman, I think, was making somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million as well. Maybe down to $25 million. They may have cut him back at a certain point.
I think Letterman had a
worldwide
show.
Huh? What?
Didn't he own Worldwide Pants?
Well, he owned Worldwide Pants, but that was simply his production company. And he, I think, had ownership of the final shows. In other words, after they ran, CBS could probably run them as much as they wanted to run them while he was still working for them. But afterwards, he owned all of them. It was the NBC shows he didn't own, and that he's had to buy the rights to be able to put it up on YouTube.
I stopped watching Jimmy Kimmel because
let let Tom say what he has
to say. I'm just saying, you know, talking about Johnny Carson's sources of revenue on that show. You know, he got a writer's credit for the Tonight Show theme.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he got paid every night because that
theme
was
lyrics.
Yeah.
He wrote lyrics.
He wrote lyrics. Can anybody sing the lyrics of the Tonight Show theme?
I'll tell you, I heard him once, oddly enough, on KPFA. They actually, it was some innocuous love song, but I heard the lyrics of song to the Tonight Show theme.
Yeah, but who wrote the music?
Was it Fabian?
No, I don't think Fabian ever had that kind of talent.
One of those.
It was Paul Anka. It was Paul Anka.
Frank the Avalon?
Paul Anka. Anka.
Paul Anka. That's it. Paul Anka.
Who I like to pronounce his name as one word, Palanka.
So, money wise, Carson and Letterman made about the same as what you're saying.
Well, I think eventually Letterman maybe made a little more, but it was years later.
Letterman was a good entertainer. Carson just brought in people and let them be the entertainers.
Well, no, he knew.
That's what I was going to say, Jimmy Fallon.
No, here's where he became the entertainer. Carson didn't entertain. He interviewed people, and they then worked for him. They kind of got the laughs and everything like that. But when they weren't funny, he knew when to take over and be funny himself.
Okay.
He was a very entertaining guy. Letterman, I agree with you, was infinitely more entertaining. At least I found him that way.
I thought so, too.
You know? I mean, Letterman could probably not have a single guest on and sit at that desk for an hour, and you'd continue to watch what he had to say, you know? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But it seems as though all the programs, all the late shows are kind of being cut down in cost and price and so on and so forth because there isn't the market there any longer. It seems as though...
Well, and because, let's face facts, Alex, in theory, you did. You and Albert, when you did that, I don't know, you always wore the hat. And you had some production studio or TV studio.
Yeah.
Like you were doing that for peanuts, but you could make it look entirely professional. So why the networks are saying, why do we pay $10 million for the show or whatever?
Well,
we could do it for,
you know, what I think,
$10,000.
I'll tell you what, one of the biggest expenses is for the Colbert show is that theater. The theater is very expensive to maintain. CBS owns it, but they have to maintain it. They have to, you know, they have to pay the electric bill, whatever. Why they didn't say, hey, why don't you bring the show down a little bit? We'll take you out of that theater, put you in one of our large studios. Because, you know, John Oliver's done it at a CBS studio here in New York. And people will know there's an audience, and hear an audience, and just scale down the show a bit. You go over and watch The Daily Show, and that they have a nice sized audience, and Colbert could work with that. You know, so.
I heard that
so could
John
be Trump.
Stewart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that John Stewart is concerned that The Daily Show is next.
Well, The Daily Show is a CBS show, it's owned by Viacom. And they could do it, but that's not a very expensive show to produce. Now, I don't know what he's getting for doing one night a week. I'm sure it's more than all the other people on that show get for a week's worth of, you know.
I don't know if you agree, but I kind of got tired of, you know, when I think back, only David Letterman kept my attention for a long period of time, and still does if he does anything on YouTube or whatever. But none of them. Jimmy Kimmel's always talking about Trump. It's Trump this, Trump that.
Yeah,
all the time.
I like him. I like Kimmel because he's doing a traditional late night talk show. You know, and he's not doing these things like playing games like Fallon does and crap like that. But I do agree with you. I think that Kimmel could lighten up a little bit on the Trump stuff because every night he does it, and so you get tired of the same diet. You know.
Well, but the other thing though is, don't they get all the celebrities essentially for free, and they're sort of they've always been this you know, the stop on the promotional tour. And it's sort of a cultural thing that we have in the States that you go, here's the circuit. You know, you got to go to Fallon and you got to, the other actor will go to Kimmel or whatever. And so they're, if they're not paying them, right? So it's hard for me to imagine that they couldn't do it in a cheaper way.
Well, if they have two actors that are stars, for instance, in a film, they'll send one star to one show and one star to the another show. Yeah.
So they don't get paid to be on the show.
Well, they get paid. I think it's something like $525.
The Screen Actors Guild is for one.
Well, whatever SAG actor is. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so it's hard to imagine what outlet. I mean, I guess they'll do them on the morning show, and the actors and actresses can go to all these podcasts.
Well, now they only have two other shows they can do, and that is Kimmel and Fallon, and they can go to the Daily Show if they want to, but they don't usually go to the Daily Show. It's like they do a lot of just. People have written books. I mean, I tune the show out after that, you know. But it
James Corden was good.
Corden was an asshole.
I liked it.
He was an asshole. A major asshole. Nobody liked that.
But he got out.
He didn't get out. They literally asked him to go. I just read today they had asked him to go. And I think it's because he was getting too difficult to deal with, you know. What happened to Bree? He got too difficult to deal with, and so that's why they got rid of him. But you know, I mean, you could. They said they didn't want to cut back on the staff, and so therefore they were just decided to end the show. Well, I'm sure most of the staff would agree, hey, fire some of us just as long as some of us still have a job, you know?
I thought Trevor Noah was good on The Daily Show.
Yeah, he was okay.
He opened his mouth towards something nasty towards women, and he was gone.
I don't think that's why he was gone. No. How many things have you said wrong tonight?
I say a lot of things wrong.
Yeah. And no, he didn't. It was had nothing to do with women. He was just tired, I think, of doing it. And he is a guy who felt he had a larger career out there if he just went and pursued it. Sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But sometimes you feel after a while you got to do it. You know. I think that there is some element of the Trump factor in the firing of him, of Colbert. And, I can't see why that isn't a possibility. Okay. Josh, you tended to agree with me last night about that, but that may have been a part of it, you know.
I'm sure they don't want to... that's what I'm saying. The money is probably more of an excuse. I mean, television has changed. Obviously, I'm sure over, you know, last 10 years, and not as many people might be watching late night shows, et cetera. So maybe it's not as easy to make a profit and things like that. But I mean, as we said, as a network, they could afford to do late night show if they wanted. They've just chosen not to. And one of the reasons I think they don't want to, part of it can be financial, but then I think when they add into that, like the political climate, they just say, why bother? Why run a low-profit show that any day now he could say something and then we're in a lawsuit, you know? Why don't we just do away with it?
I think that was probably the thinking about it.
Probably just easier, I guess.
To begin with, I think it was a stupid move of them to make at this time. Had they waited a year and then made this decision for the next year, okay, the heat would have been off of them. Because by then, the whole Trump payment and all of that would have gone away, and they'd probably be owned by Skydance. And they wouldn't have to worry about any of that. But right now, anything they would do like that would put them under suspicion. Tonight I was watching the CBS Evening News, and they ran a big story about Colbert getting the boot. And I looked over at Marjorie and I said, you know what this has written all over it? CBS trying to hedge their bets. Let's let him report it on our newscast at 6:30, and everybody will think, well, we're not bothered by it because we're letting them do it. Okay? So I just think there's more to it. And there are people, who was it that asked that? Somebody asked that the state attorney general of the state of New York look into this, because the show was done in New York after all, and to see if there was some political influence involved in it all. So, whatever. What happened to Bree? He didn't come back. Usually Bree comes back. But anyway. So, anyway, that's a big story. And then what was the story I was closing off the show with last night that we didn't get around to?
Said you were going to get to it tonight.
Yeah, but I started talking about it. Do you remember what it was? Let me see. We had the Colbert thing. We had something. Oh well, the thing today was that Trump is suing Rupert Murdoch.
Oh,
okay. That'll go nowhere.
For the Wall Street Journal article.
Well, you can bet Rupert Murdoch ain't going to lay down and die.
No.
Like CBS.
Well, Wall Street Journal has always been a conservative-pointing, you know, news.
Well, so. I mean, he owns Fox.
Right.
So, you know, it's almost as though Trump is, you know, biting his own, what's the term? Biting his own hand. You know, I mean, it's biting the hand that feeds him.
Biting his nose, to spite
his face, any one of those things. I mean, why is he going after Rupert Murdoch? Do you have any idea, Josh, or is that just the nature of Donald Trump these days?
Yeah, I don't know that anything that happens to do with Murdoch, he just doesn't like what they wrote, I assume.
What they did is they wrote that there was a letter that that Trump wrote to Epstein that had a picture of a naked woman on it, and it said, you know, hope everything goes good. What was there?
It was a birthday card,
and he said what? You remember there was something in there that was kind of fishy. I hope the best of everything, something for you. I can't remember now.
Something about daily secrets or something
that's
like that.
That's it.
There are no signs that card. I mean, he was just. I don't think
it was just one card from Trump. There were cards from other people on his birthday.
But that's the way he operates.
Huh?
That's just the way he operates, because he wants people to think in the back of their mind, you know, should I do this? Oh, no, because Trump will come after me.
I mean, I'm sure the story is, or the lawsuit is a way to exaggerate the story's timeline. Trump, I think, probably honestly believes that, you know, for himself, there is no such thing as a negative story that's bad press for him, you know, like politicians used to be worried about or something. If it's anything at all that will keep people talking about him on a nonstop basis, then he will continue to push it. So a lawsuit is a way to make sure that the story comes up again, you know, 5 or 6 more times this year, for example, you know, because at some point there'll be a deposition, or then there'll be a hearing, and then there'll be a follow-up to the hearing, and, you know, and all 5 or 6 of those times, It'll be the second or third story on the networks and things that night. So that's, you know.
Joss, are you saying that Trump wants to keep the story in the news?
Oh, he wants to keep anything he can in the news.
He's fine with anything.
Because he obviously does not want the Epstein story to be in the news.
He uses these other stories to try and deflect from whatever heat he has on him from something else. And in most cases, it works. But where the Epstein situation is concerned, it's just not working. Bree, you had your hand
up. Well, it's not deflecting. That's for sure. It's focusing, on Epstein.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, because I'm going to get lunch here in the ceremony in Singapore today, and then I'm back to KL tomorrow and Bangkok on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to raise an issue that
no
I thought
you.
Was good. And speaking of Thailand, this is kind of quaint, but they have a prime minister who was essentially deposed because she made a phone call to a Cambodian senator. And it was somewhat innocuous, but he decided to leak the call. Mm-hmm. And she essentially got fired from her job because of that. And I'm thinking, Trump makes calls where he says things that are absolutely illegal and nothing happens. And this prime minister of a country makes just a call to say, hey, you know, can we? And she called the senator uncle. She called him uncle because their families knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Thai people were outraged, like, oh, you don't call this guy uncle. We have a border dispute with them, blah, blah, blah. And it looks, I haven't followed the news in the last several days, but it looks like she will lose her job as prime minister because of this call. So isn't it quaint that in some countries a phone call can lead to a
leader? And we're stuck with this guy for the next 3.5 years.
Right.
You know, and there's nothing we can do about it. We can't, you know. And if we throw him out of office, let's say we impeach him. Let's say he does something so horrendous we can impeach him. Where does that get us? You know? J.D. Vance?
Yeah.
Think of that one.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't think he really wants the story to go away. I know that he's tweeting things or whatever it's called, and he's acting that way and all that, but I don't believe that he really wants it to. I don't think he's really upset about it at all. I mean, as long as you're talking about him, that's...
Well, it seems as though every day we're talking about him. It's like he wakes up in the morning and says, what can I say today that will get me in the news or at least get people talking about things other than, say, the Epstein thing? And so he tries everything he can. Oh, I'm going to sue them.
I don't even
this.
Know if he cares if you talk about the Epstein thing deep down. I don't think he cares because you're talking about him. I don't think he did any activity that he's ashamed of because he doesn't have any sort of morals. And
or
even if
shame.
He did something that was wrong and could cause him more like legal troubles or anything, I don't think he's worried about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as his people go or whatever, I'm sure he's thinking, What are they going to do? Seriously, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
What are they going to do if tomorrow there's some document comes out says he fucked a 17-year-old girl? What are they going to do? What's going to happen? Everyone's going to talk about it, but after they're done talking about it, what's going to happen?
Nothing.
I mean, it's not a ball game where, you know, a guy just hit a home run and now we have more.
Let's say it turns out Epstein hooked him up with a 14-year-old girl.
You know,
and let's say it we have proof positive that he had sex with her. Do you think that would have, is that grounds for impeachment?
No, nothing will happen.
Who's going
to
impeach
him? It'll take 20 minutes for the Speaker of the House to be like, well, you know, there was a time in this country when that was a common age for men of his age to marry women of his, you know, that age. And, you know, at the time, the age of consent in New York was 15. She was 14 years and 9 months. He didn't have a way of knowing that. She lied to him about her age. She was a real slut. You know, she was dressed provocatively. I mean, I'm just saying that nothing would happen.
And what would happen?
Everyone would continue to talk about it, and that would thrill him.
And what would happen to you if you did it?
I would go to prison.
Any one of us would go to prison.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not saying I know this for sure or anything. I'm just saying, you know, I've listened to a few things in the past where there were some reporters, you know, that I know that talked to that were like, if you talk to the people super close to him, he honestly does not care what the story is. He does not believe in any way, shape, or form that there's anything in this world that exists called bad press. He does not believe in its existence when it comes to him.
Well, it's the old saying.
It applies to everyone else, but not him.
Well,
there's
an old saying that there's no such thing as bad publicity. And I got news for you. There is such a thing as bad publicity.
Well, but
it's got to be of a certain nature. That
well, for some people, but I'm just saying I've heard multiple people say in conversations I've heard on radio shows and things in this term where he has come to believe that that does not apply to him. That does not apply to him at all. That he is above all of that.
You know what I want to get? What I want to have him arrested for? What I want to have him arrested for? And it's the one thing he's blatantly guilty of. What he has done to the Oval Office.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not, every time you see it, the ugliest thing you've ever seen in your life? And does it not strip the Oval Office of any level of dignity it could possibly have?
Yeah, it looks terrible. It looks terrible. I mean, it has no integrity to it. I mean, it's
He didn't even do that during his first term. You know?
I don't think so.
He pretty well just had purple curtains or something. And,
yeah. It looks terrible. It's shameful, but, I mean, no one would ever say... I mean, they're not going to say anything about... I mean, no matter what happens, an excuse will be made. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I don't... There's nothing that's going to be in any document or any... I mean, you know, it doesn't matter.
Is there anything we can do about the Oval Office, though? Is there anything we can do? Can we just, like, all sign, you know, petitions saying, please give the Oval Office back some of its dignity? And that gold does not necessarily look good, especially on somebody's face. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. How are you feeling about all this, Tom?
Well, I just getting back to what Josh was saying. I don't know. He certainly cares about what his supporters say, and the Epstein thing has really divided his supporters. In fact,
well, also, he said he didn't care what you thought. You know, if you're not not with me, don't even vote for me. Basically,
he doesn't want to. Well, that's what he says. Yeah, if you're concerned about the Epstein thing, then you're not a real supporter. But I think he really cares. I think he's really, really concerned. I just, you know, I get Republican emails. And today's the first time I actually got a Republican email regarding Epstein from this guy named Eric Burleson, a congressman. His fundraising email is getting us to sign a petition to release the full Epstein files with Thomas Massie. And interesting thing about this thing is he blames it on Joe Biden, but he doesn't say anything about Trump, you know. But they're definitely pushing to release the full unredacted Epstein files. And it's sort of like they're holding this contradiction where, you know, they don't want to blame Trump, but at the same time, Trump is the one that's the obstacle here. I mean, he wants it to go away. He doesn't want anybody to talk about it.
Yeah, right. Yes, Alan.
I want to change the subject to your credit. You were talking about Trump wanted to buy Alcatraz.
Oh, that was it. Yes.
See, I get a bonus point.
Okay, I'm glad you remembered. Okay.
I actually was watching the show and had this muted.
You're watching last night's show.
That last night's show, yeah. Thank God it was up.
Because we couldn't get to that last night. Yeah. Now we're almost at the end of the show here, but at least we got 5 minutes or so we could do.
Yeah. And Alan gets one right, so there you go.
Who did he send out to Alcatraz? I'm trying to remember.
What's her name?
Gnome?
Gnome?
Yeah. And a bunch of Republicans look over Alcatraz as a possible detention place for Trump's worst enemies, okay?
Himself?
You know. To begin with, all Alcatraz ever was a place to put Hoover's enemies. You know,
prison.
Yeah, and it was, and I mentioned this last night, it only held 300 people. Mm-hmm. So is that going to solve the problem of 100,000 migrants who have to be housed somewhere? No. What are they, you know, you live in the Bay Area, Tom, and you live in the Bay Area, Alan. And if Kevin were here, I could go to him, too. But what do you think? I mean, you live in the Bay Area. Do you want to see that place?
It's a national monument.
That's right. I agree.
It's a national monument. It's a tourist attraction.
Well, it's officially a national monument, and in tourist money, it makes more money than they could possibly. It would cost them more to just fix the place up. It's a fixer-upper. It really is, you know.
Alligator prison, it would be a shark prison.
Well, no, it's the real Alcatraz, okay?
It's a museum. It's basically a museum.
It is a museum.
Not only a museum of a prison, but it's also a political protest. Remember the
Indians.
A bunch of Indians took it over and held it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And they that is now its own exhibit in Alcatraz.
And that's the reason why, by the way, one of the structures, if you look at the island, has been burned almost a crisp. It's a hull of a building that looks like it was set on fire, and that's exactly what happened during that occupation. Mm-hmm. The thing is that for instance, they show Alcatraz and they show the main, what they call Times Square, they used to refer to it as, that main cell block that they shoot, you know, it's in all the movies and everything else. It got restored, but it got restored by Clint Eastwood for a movie mm-hmm. he was making yeah. called Escape from Alcatraz.
That's
so
right.
if it's been fixed at all, it was for that. I think it's still pretty in good shape that way.
One of the Dirty Harry movies was filmed partly out
yes,
there.
Yes, it was.
Was Dirty Harry? No, I don't.
Yeah, it was.
Which one?
I think it was. It was filmed there.
Really? I know.
Magnum Force or one of them was partly filmed.
Yeah, the
out
one
there.
That had Tyne Daly playing his partner.
Also, also The Rock was done out there.
Yes, it was.
And in that case, I call that the only James Bond film made that didn't have James Bond's name on it, because the whole plot is that he was a former British agent who was wound up in jail or something and let him go back and take the Rock, which I think they had some bad guys who had taken possession of it. But all I'm saying is that it was the movie companies, and I think in that case the solitary confinement area has been fixed up by another movie company for that movie. So it was various movie companies that, you know, made it look better, okay?
Maybe Trump can line it with gold just in case he ends up there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would cost a lot of money to get that thing up to speed.
Sure.
And once you did, you don't have the capacity. You can't fit more than 300 people in there, you know? It's not like it was this gigantic prison. It was probably the smallest prison we had in the prison system, in the federal prison system. When I was a kid, I grew up, and there was that island sitting out there. You know, and all you could do was
still
look,
there.
Look, I know. Of course it is. and I kept looking at it and wondering what it was like. You know, and I would get binoculars and look at it. It was fascinating. I think you would agree too, Tom. It's a fascinating island.
Have you ever been through it, Alex?
Well, what I was about ready to tell that story. When I came back to San Francisco after a long hiatus away from San Francisco, the first thing I did was head for the Rock because they had tours going. And I could actually go on Alcatraz and walk around Alcatraz, and I could see. Do you know that when people were at Alcatraz, they were not allowed to talk to each other?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
That would have been a cute place to have breakfast with Bennett's from Alcatraz.
Yeah, well, you'd have to float a lot of people out there, and I don't know if we had that ability. But to say that you're going to use it as some kind of prison for people who Trump doesn't like. It's just, the expense of keeping that thing going just to hold 300 people is ridiculous.
Well, look at all the money they're sinking that place in the upper place. I mean, like, it's just like tents, and they're charity. Yeah. They don't have fresh water. They have to truck water in. To drinking water is coming through the toilets.
Well, all they did there was build a couple of tents, set up fencing, and put a bunch of beds in the fencing.
And then found out
there's
no
electricity. They have to have generators.
Yep.
It's just massively expensive, and those tents are already falling down.
Now there was a flood there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
From the storms.
Well, every reason, because that's a swamp area.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all these things that are costing us money, my God, I'm just amazed at it,
But we don't have to pay for NPR anymore. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, that's another one, okay? I mean, that is just ridiculous. It wasn't only $9 billion for that. There were some other things, too, that were included in that bill. Huh?
Well, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
No, but there were other things, and I can't remember what they were now. Some USAID things.
Oh,
USAID,
yeah.
You're taking Medicaid away from everybody, and that's going to hurt the red states more than it's going to hurt the blue states.
Well, Medicaid being taken away is going to hurt the hospitals, especially in rural areas, who rely on that money to keep them going.
Absolutely.
And so if they close down and the closest place you can go to get medical help is like 100 miles away, it's not going to be a lot of fun. Nope. But does Trump care about any of this? Do the Republicans care about any of this?
No, they just passed it today.
I don't know how they can wake up in the morning and look at themselves in the mirror and say, I'm doing a good job for my constituents. Anybody in the red states, especially down south, better start getting ready for some problems finding a hospital.
Or a convalescent home. I was listening to my union. We have monthly calls, and they're saying that it's not just the hospitals. I mean, the whole Medicaid structure of care, that includes convalescent hospitals, they're all in danger.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's home supportive services that I do is in trouble.
Yeah. So... Oh, boy. Well, here we go. Were we talking about Trump tonight? Yeah, we were.
Dead people.
The last two things we were talking about were some things he wanted to do that we don't agree with. But anyway, put me in Alcatraz, okay? I'll be happy to be there. What the hell? Do you have good medical care? if you do, maybe that's the answer to your medical problems. Anyway, I want to thank you very much here, Tom, for joining us this evening. We really appreciate it. We also appreciate you being here, Alan, as well as Josh. Got him two nights in a row. Yes, sir. And Charlie, nice hearing from you, too. You're a little quiet tonight, but you look like you're tired. Huh? Are we going to say I have your mic down? What? Did you say
I umpired last night, so I'm still worn out from that.
Yeah, really? Boy, are you getting old. And finally, Jeff, thank you so much. Everybody, give a big wave goodbye. And I give a big wave goodbye at you, okay? Oh, goodbye to the doggy, too. Bye. Anyway, that's it for tonight. Our good friend Amy Manuel is next. She's going to be here taking your calls on Zoom. Just go over to gabnet.net, column 3 down at the bottom. You see her name. Click on that, and it'll take you right to her Zoom address. Okay? In the meantime, I'll see you again Monday for the pop-up show. And then we'll see you again next Wednesday. Same time, same station in life. In the meantime, as always, if you see her, tell her I love her, okay? Okay.